how he's thinking more. What is his conception of bhakti? So, he says that in his kingdom, there are many temples. And we see that the Brahmin didn't have a temple. He just came to Prayag, and he just set up some pandal, and he performed his puja there. But the king, he has many, many temples. And from all those temples, they're distributing prasad. And so many beggars and so many mendicants are coming to his kingdom, and they're receiving prasadam from those temples. So he's feeding many, many people, not like him. He was only feeding, maybe once a year he's doing a festival and feeding everyone. But every day, the king was feeding so many people. Goswami also mentions here in the purport that by the word Maharaj, he's indicating here that he was the Adhiraj, he was the superintendent of many different kings, or overlord of many different kings. But he was not the Raj Chakravarti, the emperor of all the lands, because at that time it was Maharaj Yudhisthira. So, then aside from that, aside from all the many temples he had in his kingdom, in his capital, there was one special temple, one very large temple. And the Lord was directly manifest there in his Trimurti form. And in that place, daily, there were so many festivals, not just like him doing one festival occasionally, but every day there was a festival there. And every day, so many newer and newer items were offered to the Lord, new foodstuffs, new clothing, and various paraphernalia for worship were being offered to the Lord. And he also mentions here that because of this special deity that was present in the temple, and because very delicious Mahaprasad was being distributed freely, so many sadhus were coming to his land. And they were coming to take darshan of the deity and also to honor the very tasty prasad. So, although the Brahmana was appreciating that so many sadhus were coming there, he never mentioned anything about taking their sangha. He only mentioned that the king was fortunate because he could feed the sadhus. Never said anything about hearing Harikatha or anything like that. So, by all these various things, we can understand the Brahmana's mentality. That he's thinking, I have only a little wealth, and I'm only able to give a little charity. If I had wealth like this king, if I had so many temples, and if I could feed millions of people every day and hold big festivals, then I could certainly consider myself to have the Lord's mercy. So all of this is describing what people's conception of bhakti is in this world. And we can see this mentality present in this very day and age, that people have this idea that if they can build huge, big temples and have very elaborate worship and mass food distribution, prasadam distribution, that this is great preaching. This is real bhakti. So this is exactly what Sanatana Goswami is describing here. This is what people's idea of bhakti is in this world, on the Mahoma platform. So this is why we are meant to study these books very carefully. Because Sanatana Goswami will expose all of these mentalities in order to gradually elevate us to the understanding of what is Uttam Bhakti and what should we be doing in order to enter Braj and the service of Sri Radha Krishna. So if we don't read these books, we will not understand these things, and we will be bound to have these ideas. We will be bound to think that real bhakti means to put up a big temple and have elaborate worship and all these things, big you know, book distribution, a big prasadam distribution. This is bhakti. But Sanatana Goswami, this is the beginning level of the book. He's saying this is not even bhakti, man. This is just karma mishra. So then he goes to the king and he praises the king. And interestingly enough, when he goes to the king, when he sees the kingdom and how there's so many sadhus there and how the people are following religious principles and how this prasadam distribution is going on and the opulence of the festivals, he goes to the capital, then he enters the big temple. He sees that the description of the brahmana, or what he saw, surpassed the description of the brahmana. Which is interesting, because generally when people describe something that they saw or experienced, there's always a tendency to exaggerate. Oh, you should have been there, it was so great, and this person is so fantastic, you should, like that. We tend to exaggerate. But when he went there, he saw that it actually surpassed the description of the brahmana in terms of the opulence and the worship and everything. So he begins to praise the king. What a great devotee he is. So when Narada Muni was praising him in this way, he became so ecstatic that he embraced the king. And he began to, again, he began to glorify him with his veena. So he was very expert at composing songs. So not only he was praising him by speaking, but he began to compose songs, play the veena, and praise him in this way. So now we should notice the reaction of the king, how it differed from the brahmana. The brahmana immediately, he just rejected what Narada Muni said. He didn't even really show proper respect to Narada Muni. But here it says that when he heard all this praise going on, he became ashamed. And he lowered his head. And he began to worship Narada Muni. And then in the very humble words, he began to speak. So we can see that the difference between the Brahmin and the king. That although he couldn't accept what Narada was saying, but he reacted in a much more humble way. First he lowered his head in shame, then he began to worship Narada, and then he began to speak, but in a very humble voice. Then he says, why are you praising this worthless person as the most beloved of Krishna, and why are you doing so without proper consideration? Well, he's not directly refusing, as in the case of the Brahmana, who said, what you're saying is not true. But he's saying that you're praising me as the most beloved of Krishna, but you're doing it without really fully considering the matter. You're not giving full consideration to the matter. So he's not quite so, he's much more respectful in the way that he's responding to Narada. And now also, we can consider what his mentality is, what his conception of bhakti is, or what his conception of having the Lord's mercy is. Actually, really speaking, we can't even say that in the Brahmana's response or in the king's response that they even have a conception of bhakti. Because if we analyze what they're saying, they're not describing anything that really comes close to a description of bhakti. They're only describing what they conceive of as having the Lord's mercy. And what they conceive of as having the Lord's mercy has nothing really to do with bhakti. So first of all, he says, Devarshi, alpa ayusham, kalpa aishvaryam, aparadam naram, asvatantaram, vayakarantam, taptraya, niyantritam. So first he says, alpa ayusham, I have a very short life. And salpa aishvaryam, I have very little opulence. Alpa paradam, that I'm only able to give just very little in charity. Naram, I am a human being. Asvatantaram, I'm not independent. I'm under the control of karma, I'm under the control of the devatas. Vaya akarantam, I am subjugated or attacked by fear. Tapatraya niyantritam, I am controlled by the threefold miseries. So in other words, he's thinking that if someone has a long lifespan, if they have great opulence, if they're able to give tremendous charity, if they're not human beings, they must be devatas. If they're svatantram, if they're independent, not under anyone's control, vayakrantam, if they don't have to suffer from fear, fear of what? Fear of death, like the demigods. As he praises them, he will say that they, because they are taking nectar, they don't have to fear death. So, and tapatraya niyantram, if someone doesn't have to suffer the threefold miseries, then if he has all of these things, it can be said that he has the mercy of the Lord. So what do any of these things have to do with bhakti? Absolutely nothing. Then he's saying that, factually speaking, it is the devatas that are the recipients of the Lord's mercy. Why? And again, we'll see what he wants, what he would like to have. If he had the Lord's mercy, what would he like to have? So he says they are always worshipped by the human beings. It means that he would like to have this position. He would like to be worshipped by the human beings. Their bodies are very effulgent, not like these bodies made of earth. And nishpapa, where they've described so many of these things, they are sinless. And as you mentioned in the purport, what does he mean by sinless? That they don't incur any karma. Because this is the karma bhumi here. We incur karma there, and then we've earned some piety, we can go to the heavenly planets, we can enjoy there, and when it's exhausted again, we come down. But while they're there enjoying, they don't incur karma. So even if they're engaged in material enjoyment, they don't incur any sin. What does this mean? He would like to be able to enjoy an unrestricted sensual enjoyment without incurring any karma. If he could have this benediction, then he would consider that, yes, this is the Lord's mercy. Sattva gunyukt, that they should be situated in the mode of goodness. But actually, as we know, this is not bhakti, this is not transcendental. Free from distress. Yes, if anyone is free from distress, then they have the Lord's mercy. They should always be happy. Swachandachar means they can do whatever they like. Swachandagati, they can go wherever they like. And they can give benedictions to those who worship them. So this would be very nice, to be worshipped by others and to have so much power that you can give benedictions to others. They always drink nectar. They are free from death, free from disease, free from old age. And they don't experience hunger and thirst. In other words, they don't have to eat as we do here. If we don't eat or drink, we will die. But they eat and drink only for their own pleasure there. They don't have to eat or drink to maintain themselves, but they do so only for pleasure. This is what he's meaning here. And they subsist by, or they are pleased by accepting the portions of jagya. This is actually what they eat, along with amrit. They eat the portions of jagya. And then he says that those who have performed tremendous punya in Bharatvarsh, they can obtain that position. So we can see the king's mentality here. None of these things have a single thing to do with bhakti. Simply thinking that you have a very long lifespan and to have the independence, to be able to go here and there, to be free from miseries, to experience happiness, have great opulence, to be worshipped by others. This is the Lord's mercy. So that's the end of home. And then we go to Divya. So then he goes to Indra, and he sees that Vamandev, he is seated on the back of Garuda. And meanwhile, Indra, he's also seated on his throne while he's worshipping Vamandev on Garuda. And so many rishis are there, and brahmanas. And this is interesting, actually, that although they are supposed to be like brother, Vamandev is supposed to be his younger brother, which one would think they would be very intimate. But while taking the worship, he's seated on the back of Garuda, which means it's like you come to see somebody, you come to see your friend, and you come in your car, and you don't even get out of the car because you're just waiting for the next moment you're going to leave. So there's so actual little intimacy that he's not even getting off the back of Garuda, because as soon as the worship is over, he's going to take off from there. He doesn't even bother to get off the back of Guru. And he's also giving his benediction like this, and Indra is praising him. But how is he praising him? He's praising him that, oh, my dear Vamandev, you have done so many things for us. You have protected us from the demons. This is the exchange between Indra and Vamandev. So what is his meaning? He's praising Vamandev, and what he means to say is that that you must continue to do like this. This is what my expectation is of you, that you should continue to protect us from the demons, because we still have this fear of the demons. As is indicated later on, actually Indra could never be fearless because Vamandev didn't actually defeat Bali. Rather, he just cheated him. So it was actually a great shame for Indra and all the devatas. They could never show their face before the asuras and say, just see, we defeated you, and we're more powerful than you. But all the asuras, they knew that it was just a joke, Indra's authority, because he had only gotten this kingdom by cheating. So, and he was always fearful that he may come again. And later on, when we hear about Prahlad and Bali Maharaj, it is said that Bali Maharaj, that the Lord was so dear to him that he became his gatekeeper. He was always situated there at Sutala, protecting his gates. But Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary, he says that actually that's not the reason why Vamandev is staying in Sutala. Not out of affection for Bali, but because he wants to keep an eye on Bali. He doesn't want Bali to go out. In other words, he's not protecting Bali from the attack of others, because Bali was the most powerful anyway. Or rather, he was like he was keeping Bali in prison. He didn't want him to go out and again disturb Indra. So Indra was always fearful that again Bali may come and attack him. So he's speaking like this to Vamandev, that, oh, my dear Lord, you are so great, you're always protecting us. So the implication here is that he should continue to do so. So as soon as the worship was over, Vamandev was gone. And Narada Muni watched the whole scene, and then he comes before Indra and begins to praise him. And Sanatana Goswami mentions here in his commentary that when he came into the assembly, he waited. He waited until the puja was over, and he waited until Vamandev had left. He didn't immediately just come in and start praising Indra, because it would have been inappropriate to do so in front of Vamandev. So he waited until puja was over and Vamandev had left, and then he came before Indra and he began to praise him. And it was said, when the very last thing that the king had said from South India was that this was like the crowning touch on all of the reasons why Indra particularly had the mercy of the Lord, because the Lord, this is Narayan himself, says Ahakim Vacham Param Tasya Subhagyam Bhagavan Gattaha Kanishta Bratritam Yasya Vishnur Vamana Rupadri. Says that Bhagavan has come in the form of Vaman, and as your Kanishta Bratri, your younger brother. So what is he meaning by this? He's meaning that according to Vedic society, the younger brother is always under the control of the older brother. He's subservient to the older brother. So he's saying that you really have the mercy because the Lord has appeared as your brother, but not just any type of brother, not as your older brother, that you have to serve him, and he can order you. But no, he's appeared as your younger brother, which means that you can order him, and he has to do whatever you say. So again, this is showing his mentality, that he wants to, he would like to order the Lord. He would like the Lord to be subservient to him, to do whatever he wants. Praising him for all of the various qualities that he heard from the king. He says here that the various demigods, such as Surya, Chandra, Yam, etc., they are all your order carriers. And what to speak of the lesser demigods? They are all under your control. And he says, even the munis, like myself, we are also under your control. And he says, the shrutis, they all consider you as Jagadishwara. Why? Because he is controlling the universe, or he's in charge of the administrative aspect of the universe. So they are all referring to him as Jagadishwara and glorify him in this way. And he says that you bestow the results of dharma and adharma. And then he says, Aho Narayanaho Prata Kanyan Yasya Sodaraha Sad Dharmam Manayam Yasya Vididat Yadharam Sada. He says, Aho. Aho is used for surprise or astonishment.
Alas.
It can also be used for alas, but here it's not used for alas. Here it's used for astonishment. Just see. It's like that. He said that Narayan has appeared as your younger brother. And he says that sad dharmam manayam yasya vididatya dharam sada. How is Narayan behaving as his younger brother? He says that he is always observing the sad dharma. What sad dharma? The dharma which is meant for younger brother towards an older brother. So he's always observing this type of behavior. He's always, in other words, he's always very subservient to Indra. He's always prepared to carry out his order, very respectful towards him. So all of the duties that are prescribed for a younger brother, how a younger brother should behave towards an older brother, that Narayan himself, assuming the form of your younger brother, he's behaving like that to you. So what a great recipient of the Lord's mercy you are. So, again and again, he was praising Indra in this way. And he also began to dance, became so ecstatic in describing the glories of Indra in this way. He began to dance. And now we can notice Indra's reaction. He says at that time he first offered pranam to Devarshi Narada. And with great shame, and then it says, he began to speak very slowly. Why did he speak very slowly? Out of respect for Narada Muni. Slowly and also a very soft tone. And how did he address them?
Bho Gandharva Kalabhigya Kim Mam Upahasam Asi.
He addresses him here as
Gandharva Kalabhigya,
which means one who is very expert in the arts of the Gandharvas. So what is the meaning here? Why is he addressing him in this way? And oh, you who are expert in the arts of the Gandharvas.
Gandharva Kalaya Adigyeshu Nityastu Nityastiti Paropahasadikam Asambhaviti Nityam Abhityaya Tata Sambhodanam.
Goswami is explaining the meaning of this address here. He says that what is the characteristic of the Gandharvas? The Gandharvas are very expert in singing, in poetry, in reciting, in praising others. Very expert in praising others. So expert. They are so expert in praising others that in the course of praising others, they can invent so many things that are actually not true. So just see how Indra is responding here. Rather than just come out and directly speak against what Narada Muni is saying, he's saying, oh Narada, you are so expert in the arts of the Gandharvas. Which means that actually what you were speaking is totally false, but you are covering it in very sweet language. So then he says, Kim, mam, upahasanasi, why are you making fun of me? So then now he will begin to describe his actual position. And then after that, he will begin to describe Brahma. He says, how many times have I fled from this place out of great fear from the daityas, from the demons? And he says that the Daityaraj Bali, the king of all the daityas, he obtained the position of Indra, because after all, Indra is a post. He said he obtained this post, and when he obtained this post, he installed all the various asuras in the positions of the various demigods. They also have various posts. So he says all the various posts, like Surya, Chandra, etc., he installed his various chiefs of the daityas in these posts. In this way he cheated me, and he usurped, or he took hold of, appropriated all of the portions of Jagya. So previously it was said that the demigods, they enjoy the Jagya Bhag, they enjoy the portion of the Jagya. And actually the style of Sanatana Goswami's presentation is that everywhere Narada is praising, he makes so many statements, praising all of the characteristics of that person. And when that person responds, one by one, he'll take apart each point that Narada Muni makes. But you have to pay attention in order to see that he's actually doing that. Now, of course, we're just summarizing, so we're not seeing all the subtleties that are there, but there's so many subtleties that are here in this book. So he's saying that Bali, he usurped my kingdom, installed all of the various Surya, Chandra, etc., and then stole the portions of Jagya. So, before, the king, or Narada, we're pointing out that Indra, he has overlordship over all of the personalities like Surya, Chandra, etc. But now here this is being refuted. Because he's saying that no, actually this is not so. Because Bali, he stole my kingdom and he installed his own person. So where is my authority over these persons? And he's saying that you said that we were enjoying the portions of sacrifice, but no, actually, they took the portions of sacrifice for themselves. Then he's saying that you said that out of great affection for me, that Narayan himself, he appeared as my younger brother. But actually, that's not at all the case. He said that it is only due to the austerities of my mother and father. Because when they saw that all of the suras, all the demigods, that they were so much distressed by these daityas, and they lost their positions, they had to go, you know, in the case of Indra, he was hiding in the stem of a lotus flower for so long. So they were experiencing such tremendous distress. And actually the Lord never appeared for them, but he only appeared due to the austerities of Kashyap and Aditi. Because they were so distressed and they performed severe austerities that the Lord should appear. So for that reason, actually, he appeared. And also, it says, Api amshamatrena gato pratitvam achyuttaha. That you said, Narada said, Tata Narayano bhrata kaniyam yasya sodaraha. He said that Narayan himself appeared as my younger brother. But actually that is not so. He said it was only amshmatrena. It was just a portion of a portion of Narayan, not Narayan himself. You also said, okay, one can say that he was my younger brother, and you said that he was following the sadharma for a younger brother, that he was so attentive to my order, and he did exactly what I wanted him to do. But that's not at all true, because I wanted him to defeat Bali in battle, and to give me the kingdom, having defeated him, so that I could have the kingdom in glory and honor, of having subdued and vanquished the demons. But no, he didn't do that. He didn't follow my order. Rather, he disgraced me by going to my enemy. That's the worst possible disgrace, especially for a Kshatriya. You go to your enemy and beg the kingdom from him. So although Indra had this kingdom, it was such a shame for him and for all the suras. So he's saying here that sure, he was my younger brother, but he didn't do what I wanted him to do. So how is he really my younger brother? He didn't really follow this sadharma for a younger brother. Then he's saying that in Swarga, there is also envy. You said that everyone is so happy there and that there's no distress. But actually there is the fault of envy is also there. And to exemplify this, he says that in my own case, I committed the very terrible sin of killing a brahmana. So because of that, there is always fear of falling. So you also, the king said, or Narada said, that in Swarga there is no fear. But here we're seeing that he's saying, no, it is not like that. I am always afraid, not just that I am occasionally afraid. But he uses the word
nitya patam mayenapi kim sukam swargavasinam.
He says, I'm always afraid of falling. At every moment I'm afraid. And we see for that reason that he performs so many detestable activities. Like, he approached this after offending his guru. He approached this Brahmana? The one who was again Narayana Gautya. Forget his name now. Anyway, everybody knows. Approached this Brahmana. And this Brahmana, his mother was related to the Daityas, was coming in the dynasty of the Daityas. So although he was a Brahmana, he had some connection there. But he gave Indra and the demigods this Narayan Kavacha. And by this they became very powerful and they were able to subdue the Daityas. But because he had some connection when he was performing puja, he was giving some little offering on behalf of the Daityas. So there was no real threat or no real harm to Indra for this purpose. But because Indra is so fearful all the time of losing his position, that immediately when he found out that he was doing this, he cut off his three heads without hesitation. And we also know that whenever some sage on this planet is performing austerities, he immediately becomes fearful. That sage may be just performing austerities in bhakti. May just be wanting to return to Godhead. But immediately, as soon as Indra sees anyone performing a little austerity, he thinks, oh no, this person wants to get my kingdom. So this fear is always there. Therefore he's saying here, nitya paka bhayanopi kim sukam swargavasinam. Before it was said that there's no fear, but we see that he's always fearful. And therefore he's saying, Kim sukam swargavasinam? What happiness is there in swargaloka? There's no happiness. Because they're always a fear, they're always afraid of losing their position. And also there is envy. Although they have such tremendous opulence, the Nandankanan forests and the Parijata flowers and trees, and even kalpa vriksha trees are there. They can get anything they want, materially speaking. And very beautiful apsaras. So much opulence is there, but still there's envy. Why? Because some have more than others. So even though everyone is enjoying a great standard of opulence, still everyone is envious of everyone else, because someone has a higher standard. So actually there's no happiness there at all. And there's always fear that the demons are going to come and attack, or that at any time they may fall from that position. So there's no happiness and always fear. Those that have just come, we're going over some of the details that were not already covered. Made some summary comments that we can understand by the description of the person that is speaking. We can understand what is their conception of having the Lord's mercy. That Narada Muni comes, he praises them, they say, no, actually I don't have the Lord's mercy, so-and-so has the mercy. And then they describe all the characteristics of that person by which he has the mercy. So in that description, that person's mentality is revealed, how they think, what they think it is to have the Lord's mercy. So we saw that on Bhoma, there's not even any conception of bhakti there whatsoever. They're only thinking that to have the Lord's mercy means to have opulence, to have a long lifespan, to have, be able to give great charity, to be able to put on a big festival, etc., etc. This is their idea. of having the Lord's mercy. It's, we can't even say that they have a conception of bhakti, really. So now we're speaking on Indra. We also mentioned that either Narada or the previous person that glorified Indra explained all the various opulences that this person has, and one by one Indra is taking them apart, showing them that actually these things simply don't apply. He doesn't have any of these things. So even though none of these things are actually bhakti, to have great opulence, to have happiness, to be free from fear, they are not even bhakti yet. But even these things he's showing that he doesn't have. Not only does Vamandev not have so much honor for me as my younger brother, but rather he completely neglects me. And he says, why? He says, Kimchamam Pratyupendrasya Vidhum Yatepsham Visheshataha Sudharmam Parijatam Cha Sargamartyam Nayasaha. So he's saying that he completely neglects me because he took away this Sudharma assembly house or meeting hall, and he also took away the Purijata Briksha from this Swarga, and he brought it to Martyalok, to the place of death. So, of course, now he's speaking about Vaman himself.